Welcome to the Agile Revolution. This is Craig, and we're very lucky to have with us on the line Steve Elliott. Steve, how are you doing?
Doing great. Great. Thanks for having me, Craig.
Excellent. So, Steve, you come to us as the CEO of Agile Craft. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So tell us a little bit about Agile Craft for those who don't know what that is.
Yeah, absolutely. The company, interesting start. You know, a lot of companies get started from someone just trying to solve a problem that they have. And been several CTO of several companies. We were always doing Agile. I started trying to incorporate Agile from the very early days in all of its early forms. And I really got a good clue into how tricky it can be to scale Agile. At one particular company where I had hundreds of people overseas, I owned product management and I owned strategy as well as engineering. And so trying to keep all of that in sync, and this, we're not talking, you know, Fortune 1000 type company, it's much smaller than that. But once you have hundreds of people collaborating and doing Agile together in line with the business and trying to keep everything aligned to make sure you place good bets, that you do the right things, you do them at the right time, that you're using the right technology, and then knowing, you know, having the folks overseas, for example, knowing why the thing they're building matters and which strategy it lines up to, how it's strategic, so that they have purpose. All of that became a real problem because there was really no way to manage it. And so initially I set out to solve the problem just to be able to take Agile and be successful in the company where I was kind of leading the effort. And did that several times with the platform over several years, and it really helped me be a more effective technology executive. And then the scaled Agile movement started picking up and taking off, and it was really obvious that a lot of companies at even much larger scales were obviously having the same problem as they adopted Agile. And so that's kind of how we all got started, and our focus is to help companies simplify software at scale by helping them link what's happening on the business side, setting strategy and dealing with threats from outside, figuring out where they want to go strategically, and aligning that with the technology in real time, so that they can not only be agile at the technical layer with Scrum and Lean and all of those methods, but also be agile up at the business layer and really drive towards business agility. So that's what we do.
Yeah, business agility is certainly the buzzword, and we'll talk about that perhaps in just a little bit. I'm just wondering you sort of mentioned that you've been playing around with this. What was the starting point for you? When did you get on this whole thing? What dragged you into the Agile community?
Yeah, for me, Agile is just perfect for the startup mindset. So I was eating it up, even in the early forms of Agile. So I've been trying to apply this, from the beginning of my career. I haven't had a lot of, I don't have a lot of true waterfall projects under my belt after doing this for 20 years. So I've been doing this for, with Agile as soon as I possibly could. We started building the technology about 10 years ago, and we founded Agile Craft as a company in 2013. So got into it really early.
So when you talk about technology, tell us a little bit more about that. What is the solution that you're alluding to there?
Oh yeah, absolutely. So what we provide is a SaaS solution. Although we do install it on prem for some of our large government agencies and banks and companies that haven't really fully adopted the cloud yet. So it's a SaaS software. It's built with HTML5. It's on a Microsoft backend database stack. Lots of JavaScript, jQuery, things like that. And it's a platform that helps basically take what you're doing at the team level. There's some really well established products out there for running an Agile team. So all the way from obviously Jira, LeanKit, Rally version 1, RTS, TFS, all those products. There's teams out there trying to do Agile, less Agile, not really Agile at all with those products. And so what our product does is it comes in and helps scale those efforts across multiple tools, multiple teams, and take it all into one program portfolio. We can do solutioning if you have that solutioning layer between program and portfolio for value stream management, and then all the way up to managing your strategy. So it's kind of interesting what happened in the space, but kind of back in the waterfall days, in the kind of traditional stage gated processes, there were products out there that helped you plan your strategy and your budget, help you capitalize, you know, and run the math for how to capitalize your software. So for managing CapEx, OpEx, all of those products were built around kind of the constructs. And when Agile came out and flipped those constructs, where we're working against, we have time boxes and we're working in a different manner of how we plan. It's not individual skill based. It's team based. You're right. The difference between bringing the work to the people and the people to the work and all of those different aspects that Agile changed, those products really stopped being effective and kind of really became time management projects. So people were using them for timesheets and not much more. So what AgileCraft has been able to do is to fill that gap and help be able to take what's happening at the teams, link it to what's happening at the business, and take an Agile approach up at the business layer as well. Something I'm very passionate about how do we shorten those feedback loops, measure value, you know, measure threats from outside and figure out how to build the best possible things and combine that with our technology so that we can have the most impact on our market.
So we might come back a little more to the round of the product, but obviously what drives any decent product is an understanding of the problem space. And so one of the things that that you've had a lot to deal with in the past is leading these large agile transformations and doing things at scale. Scaling is the buzzword at the moment. So, and there's a lot of criticism in the agile community that should we just keep things small? You know, is scale just something that sells software and sells consultants? So, is agile at scale a true problem in your opinion?
100%. I think a lot of the problems that people are trying to deal with at scale are things that kill agility. And as companies evolve, I do think you can reach a point eventually where you need less of these scale mechanisms. But to do that in most companies, you would really have to rebuild not only your technology, but you'd also have to completely reorg your company. And even then, with the complexity of some of these products that are being taken on with hardware, software, and all of the other aspects of what's going on, it's really difficult to not, for example, have dependencies. Dependencies in my mind are one of the number one things that kill agility. So we can say we want to have small projects, small teams, and just kind of, just innovate down at that level. And that really is the goal. But what tends to happen is unless you're perfectly aligned and you've been doing this for a long time, it's really hard to have an organization that scales up from a bunch of independent organisms that aren't connected somehow in some sort of planning cadence. And so what I tend to see in these larger companies, now a lot of them are earlier in their journey for Agile. They've been doing Scrum for a while, but they haven't really figured out how to bridge the gulf between team and program and then program to portfolio yet. And so it really puts a lot of stress on the planning. And even if you're, one of the things I talk about a lot is even if you're really good at building software quickly and with good quality, those are real building blocks for building amazing stuff. But if you're building the wrong stuff, you're still not going to get the effect that you want. And it has to be linked up to the business. So that's really what it's about. Now, I do think the way it works today is very heavy. That's just a commentary on where organizations are in their transformation. So I think as they get further through their scaled transformations, you start to see a lot of those, I wouldn't call them training wheels, but a lot of those mechanisms we're using for dependency management, for example, start to go away. And we figure out how to break dependencies in the technology. We figure out how to structure our teams over time to reduce dependencies. But to do that and to get to that point takes a while. You have to work through it. It's very hard to just reorg the organization on day one with your transformation and figure out how to do all these things technically within the product and deal with all the cultural aspects of it. So it really is a 5 to 10 year journey. And for me, the scale piece is just getting it to where we've reconnected strategy with execution again. And then from there, we can start working to drive it to another level to where we're even more agile again. So it doesn't mean that the teams have to be less agile, but they do have to start to accommodate a little bit more for what's happening around them and be able to plug into the bigger plan and make sure that they're rolled up into the bigger plan strategically. So that's if I summed it up one more time, I probably could have said it a little more concisely, but when Scrum first came out, what I saw a lot was the teams kind of disconnected from the programs. And so your layer there that's responsible for managing, the product vision across levels, product management, PMO, all those layers, it kind of disconnected a bit because now these teams are out there moving faster, but they're not as connected and as connected up through the program vision up into the portfolio. What's happened now is we're rolling out these scaled methods with SAFe and Nexus and Less and DAD. And now what I see is the programs have become agile. Now we're running these predictable time periods, you know, and SAFe they're called release trains. Other things call them, you know, other names for those planning cadences. But by doing that, they're getting predictable across, you know, 100 teams within a portfolio, and that's great. But now what we're seeing is with the more advanced companies, they're trying to bridge the gulf between these programs being predictable up into the portfolio and strategy, and also with the solutioning in between. So that's where it's taking us. But if you want business agility, you got to hinge all that technology into the business. And if you just say the teams are going to stay small and nimble and do what they want and try to line up with a strategy periodically, that's nice, but that's not as agile, and we're not going to get the same impact as if the business can be take on those agile principles. And as they're making their moves and trying to make their pivots, the technology's in sync, and we're making the best decisions across the board.
So there's a few little things in that in there that I sort of wanted to pick up on. And the first one was that you allude to these transformations and their length, and you allude to 5 or 10 years, which I assume, I mean, anybody you know, like myself as an agile coach, it's maybe not surprising, but that length of time tends to go against the whole definition of agility, which is you know, quick and nimble. And also, I suspect it's something that when you're talking, I'm sure, to C-level executives, is that something that that people are aware of, that these transformations do take time? And if so, why do they take so long?
Yeah, that's been one of my learnings. I led one at a public software company with AgileCraft before I founded AgileCraft, and I went for the big bang. And this was not a massive company. You're talking about a billion-dollar tech company. So it's large. You're talking well over 1,000 people in the process, but you're not talking a Fortune 100 company. And I went big bang. I was like, we're going to be agile, and we're just going to apply this across the board. So we at the program and portfolio layers, we tried to put in mechanisms very quickly, very early on, and tried to get those cadences going across the organization. And there was a big push, and there was a lot of effort, and everyone did their best to take those principles. Now at the time, this was a big bang approach where we hadn't been doing Scrum for a while. So if you can imagine, the teams were going through a tremendous amount of change in how they operated as well. And so it was a good approach in that we were trying to get from kind of the, you know, like you're trying to rock over a Coke machine, and it takes a few rocks before you can actually push that sucker over. So a lot of transformations or agile rollouts, you'll see them kind of stutter a little bit or fail, and then they'll try to restart them. So sometimes it takes a few times for these companies to have it stick and have it really work. And with the big bang approach, what you're risking there is that the entire transformation is going to be like rocking a Coke machine. And it's the best analogy I could come up with in the day. So
it's better than cow tipping, I guess. I mean,
exactly.
I mean, you are from Texas, right? So
that's correct. Yeah. And if you tip the cow correctly, it just goes straight over. Otherwise you just get run over. Yeah. So with that approach, I took the big bang approach, and it's a risky one because what happens is, if you really don't take the time to make sure that the culture and all the aspects, I don't believe in leading with culture. I think you lead with some results, and then you work on the culture with agile transformations. Personally, that's my opinion. I think it's really hard to just lead with a cultural change. I think you have to show some results, build some success, and then affect the culture with results. And I think doing that takes a little bit of time. And so even if you build up my view now is, I think that approach is flawed because unless you're going to spend a lot of money and get a lot of coaches in there right up front and really spend a whole lot of money up front, which most companies resist, on the consulting side, I think it's really hard to do a massive complete transformation in a year or two. A good ones can go 4 or 5 years. What I've also seen is some companies underestimate the impact, and it takes a couple tries, and it ends up taking, you know, 6, 7, 8, you know. I haven't seen one take 10 years yet, but I also know of companies that have tried that haven't got there yet that probably are going to take 10. So it's not ideal, but I think it's reality. I think if you want to take, you know, the entire company and get it to where we really change the mindset of the teams, the programs, the portfolios, the strategic planners, the executives, everybody in that organization, get them to an agile mindset where they're bought in. And now, now we're agile. I think that takes some time. And what, you know, the way I look at that is, if, you know, let's say you've got a leader, a CIO or CTO or head of development, whoever's leading this transformation, one of the best ways to market is if that person left, would they continue to go agile because it's now their DNA, or would they fall back into old practices? And a lot of times what you'll see is if that agile leader moves on to another company or changes jobs, a lot of times in companies they start to fall back to the old way. And if that happens, if you can go back to the old way, you weren't transformed. So I would never be able to build software without using Agile, because I've been transformed. And these organizations, it just takes a while to get it to where that's true DNA, to where, you know, the whole leadership, you know, the heads of engineering and product and all the Scrum Masters could leave and that company would still be Agile, right? So that's kind of, I'm talking about the full transformation, not just everybody doing Scrum. I don't think that's not transformation. It's really important, because that's the building blocks, predictable teams with good quality, but it's not transformation.
So when you're talking to C-level executives about their when they're on the journey, is there an acceptance that this is something that's not going to happen, in 3 weeks, and we flick a switch and wave our magic agile wand and it's automatically going to be there? Is there an acceptance that in order to get true business agility, this will take time?
Yeah, that's usually my message. I try to in our role as a company, you know, we're a software technology platform that enables a transformation, but we don't lead them ourselves. So we usually line up with whoever the transformation experts in there are in their approach, and they have different approaches. But most of the ones I work with are realistic about, look, a lot of the hard work is going to go into the first year. We're going to make some great strides in the first year, but if you stop there, you're probably not going to get to where you really want to get, which is business agility. So I believe that I'm hearing that story told better more and more. I think the expectations early on was that, you know, oh, there's some new scaled frameworks, we'll just go get trained on it, and then we'll apply it, and, you know, 6 months later, you know, bada bing, bada boom, we have arrived. And it's, I don't think most of these transformation consultants are talking that way anymore. I think we've realized that it's a little harder than that. Now there are areas where, you know, I think in a mid-sized company, it can happen much, much faster. Obviously, if there's more executive buy-in, more control, less levels, less complexity, less, you know, bureaucracy, things can go much faster. We tend to work and just to make sure, my perspective is we're working primarily with, you know, with global 1000 Fortune 1000 type companies. So we're talking, you know, very, very large enterprises, and it takes a little while to get them to move.
Yeah. You talked a little bit about some of the methods, and you know, even if you scroll through your website, they're all listed out. You know, Safe and Dad and Less and Spotify and all those type of things. There's been a lot of criticism in recent times. I guess you might call them the agile purists, but about these methods, that they're still not fully baked, that they add more complexity. What's your view on that as a company that supports all these different approaches?
So part of the criticism, I think, is a bit warranted, right? So these frameworks are relatively new. I know some of them have been around for years, but if you look at what's happening to all of the frameworks, they're evolving. So when they go from one release of the framework to the next, you don't see minor changes, you see major changes. And I think what's happening is we're obviously trying to figure out, just like we did in the early days at the team level with Lean and Scrum, we're trying to figure out how, you know, I think when I first started doing Agile, it felt like there were 30 methods for Agile. And now people have kind of figured out, okay, this, you know, it's kind of come together to this set of practices that make a lot of sense, that kind of work every time. And I think on the scaled side, we're taking that agile approach, and we're experimenting and we're learning as fast as we can. But I know without it, It was a lot of chaos. So if you have a lot of groups just out there doing the team level agile bit, and they're not rolling up and plugging in with the rest of, you know, IT in the business, or if you're a software company rolling up into the strategy, creates some serious problems with delivery. And even like I said before, even if we're getting faster with dropping releases, you know, the companies that win are the ones that can see the future and adjust and deal with things that are happening in the market quickly. And that means the business and the technology have to stay in sync. And without a framework of some sort, or some sort of process, some sort of guidance, it's really hard for these companies to do it. I mean, if you're a small company, if you're a startup or a mid-sized company, it's a little easier because there's not as many layers of you know, to have a discussion across. But in a really large company, you got to have some process to keep the business and the technology in sync. It can't be that we meet at the beginning of every year. It can't be that we meet every 6 months and that's great. There was a day there where the business and the technology were in perfect sync and they all wanted to go to the same direction, because, you know, if you go to that company several weeks later, things have changed. The business objectives have changed. Some things in the technology that we thought were going to be this way were that way. We blew an estimate. So it has to be a continual real-time syncing of the needs of the business and the strategy that we want to go kill, and what's happening in the technology. They're both very dynamic. They both have lots of moving pieces, and that's accelerating in this new economy. So I believe you need these frameworks. You have to have these frameworks if you want to do agile at scale in a big company. I do also believe that we're going to enhance those frameworks dramatically over the next 5 years.
Hmm. And I mean, you read the reports, like I mean, version one, you know, have their State of Agile survey, for example, and you know, they're always coming out that, you know, Scrum is still the most preferred method. Are you seeing any sort of preference? I mean, is SAFe an out and out leader in this space, or is there lots of adoption happening in sort of the lesser known one, or the, you know, probably the more newcomers like Less or even just one of the Agile delivery, which is actually the granddaddy, but it's probably lesser known.
Yeah, what I'm seeing, you know, and again, my viewpoint is really large companies, so it's a little bit skewed from the whole picture. But at the team level, Scrum is still very dominant. I am seeing more and more teams push towards Lean, and I'm actually seeing it in a more healthy way than I used to. So what I used to see was, you know, teams never, you know, were brand new to Agile, will try to just straight up go to a Lean flow, and they really hadn't even mastered how to estimate and become predictable as a team, and sometimes that didn't work out very well at all. Now what I'm seeing is, you know, these teams have been together doing Scrum for a while, and they're figuring out, like, some of the ceremony, some of the stuff we're doing, we can get past doing that because we've become predictable without it. And we've broken all of our work down to the same level every time, and we can just flow, which is fantastic, right? So I am seeing that trend at the team level, but really, really the good teams are using a little bit of both. You know, they're looking at their cycle times, they're looking at Lean metrics. They may still have a bit of a 2 week cadence to it. So it's, you know, Scrum Band is what I'm trying to say. Some of that is still definitely going around. And then, you know, a lot of application of good testing practices and XP practices as well to go with it. So it's like a blending of all those. That's what I'm seeing at the team level. When you start to go to the scaled methods, you know, we have a yearning to see more of those methods take flight. And get more traction, purely just because I believe that if there's more experimentation with different things, that at the end, the whole space will be better for it. But what I'm seeing is that in most markets, Europe's a little bit, I'm starting to even see in Europe, because Europe was a little more focused on Less and some of the other frameworks, but SAFe is really taking off there. So SAFe is definitely the one that most companies have gravitated towards or tried. I think the key there is that companies have figured out, and the way it's presented now is not that you need to do all of this, is that this is a framework, and there's parts of it that you can take and make your organization better. But you don't need to try to apply this thing, you know, completely as is. And there's different flavors of it now. So SAFe is big, but I personally would like to see some of the other frameworks get a little more traction. just because, like I said, I think we'll get more innovation in the market that way. If there's a little more competition and a little more adoption of some of the other frameworks, I think that's a healthy thing.
Yeah. So you alluded to business agility before, and it's a term that it's a term that lots of people now like to throw around. It's almost the next wave. You know, we've gone through, as you said, the team-based agile and rolling out to the enterprise, and now we all want to talk about business agility because it's the next cool thing. I know you guys were involved with the conference earlier in the year, which was got a lot of traction, was a huge success as well. My first question is, what is business agility? How do you explain it? What's your definition of business agility?
Yeah, for me, it's always been about business agility, but it's because I'm a startup guy, right? I've always worked in large startups, fast growing companies, and I think the reason a lot of our innovation comes from those types of companies is because they're all about business agility, right? They've got that whole lean agile mindset where they want to quickly get something out there, test it, learn from it, and just keep build, test, learn, right? In these shorter and shorter cycles and be able to have, that's the fastest way to innovate. We know that long innovation cycles are deadly because things just change too fast around you. And so for me, that's business agility is being able to at the business level, as you see threats, as you see things coming in your market and things changing in your market, as you see opportunity, being able to actually do something about that quickly, obviously quicker than your competitors. And that's business agility. So many examples have come up lately. I mean, Whole Foods being bought by Amazon today. If you think about what Amazon's done, they came out as an online bookseller. And what they've become is an amazing technology company. And what that allows them to do is to threaten everybody. They are threatening all kinds of spaces. So, for example, they just rolled out a platform that competes with, at the Business Agility Conference. Actually, I heard an executive, I don't think it was from GoToMeeting. I think it was from WebEx, but he was talking about, we used to be able to define our competitors. Like, we're in this space. Nowadays, technology is such a big factor in how you compete and who's going to compete with you. Amazon's now in that space because they're a good technology company, and they're so far off of selling books online. They've expanded so large that they're competing with a lot of companies. And so the story there, though, is that you don't know where the threat's going to come from. But there's a few things you know. One is this technology curve is only going to accelerate. And if you think about the application of we've gone through several revolutions in the last couple hundred years with steam and then electricity. And then we went through the information age. And right after that of computers and the internet completely changing our personal lives and how business works, we're about to go through another massive one with physical and digital and biological coming together. I've seen some amazing technology this week at Red Herring, but the applications of what's going to be possible is going to disrupt so many businesses. And so this technology curve and the amount of competitors that can come after you and how quickly, like an Uber can come into a space and flip it on its head by using technology to connect users and riders, and have such a massive impact and build, you can argue how much they're worth. And I know they're having some troubles last few months, but, a $50 billion company in a few years, completely impossible 10 years ago. It used to be about the size of your business, and that gave you staying power. And now it's about innovation. And so because of that, the companies that are going to win are the ones that have business agility. And all that means is just that they can see what's happening outside. They can internally look at their business, look at all the assets that they have, and figure out how to best deploy them, make the best bets, have short feedback cycles so they can see what's working and what's not. Something's not working, or if we get a lot of value by spending 20% of the budget, we want to be able to quickly shuffle those chips somewhere else and place another bet. And to be able to do that, though, it has to line up with the technology, because without the technology today, you can't do much. And so that's business agility. It's a business where my strategy is not something I set yearly. My strategy is something where I am watching what's happening around me and looking for opportunity all the time. And if I want to pivot, I can do the analytics and understand the technical impact and the business impact, how much value it's going to drive. I can quickly test it in the market or test it with wherever I'm working and figure out if it's going to work. And so without Agile at the technical level, though, a lot of that's not possible. And so this technology piece and being able to do Scrum and then scaled up to connect to that business layer was the big enablement piece that big companies needed, because they're gonna increasingly be threatened. It's a very exciting time for folks like us who love software.
Yeah, and I guess back in the old days, back when you and I started this, when three people and a dog were talking about extreme programming, we used to often talk about the top down, the bottom up, and the bottom up is the team really pushes those agile technical practices, and the top down means you need some support in the organization to do it. What I'm really seeing with business agility now is that for those organizations that still hold on to their tried and true sequential type processes, they're going to get left behind, and it's not because of agile per se, but that top down is now not support for doing agility. It's the fact that that is the whole strategy and the whole the way that the organization just needs to go. And so agile is just the expected way that not only we develop software, but just how we do business.
Exactly. Yeah, and so even the view of technology and IT has changed so much. I think companies have finally, many of them figured this out, years ago, but any space we go into, it's amazing. So, you go into an oil and gas company or a retail company or a bank, and you're like, oh, you're a bank. These are the services you provide. How many people in here are building software? And the answer in these big companies is like, oh, we have 9,000 people who build software. Oh, wow. You're basically have a software company sitting on over here in these buildings. That's amazing. Where do you plan to invest in the future in those buildings and in growing that group? What are they working on? Oh, it's the most strategic stuff we're building. And so you're two banks. Most of your services are commoditized. How do you compete? It's our online services, our mobile experiences. Those are how we talk to our customers and brand ourselves on social. It's all got this huge technology element. And I think that's going to only increase. And so it's an amazing time for technology. But companies in any vertical, any space, governments, if they don't keep the pulse of it and keep up with it, I think they're going to find that competition is going to be vicious over the next 10, 15, 20, however long it takes. But it's only going to accelerate that, I'm confident of.
So one of the other things that I know you guys have been playing around with, because when we talk about the future of Agile, what's coming next, AI, artificial intelligence, and all these types of technologies are really the sort of the new coolness in the technology space. But you guys have sort of been looking at different ways that AI can help in or enable agility in organizations. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so we're very interested in it, and we're definitely trying to figure out how we can use what's available there now. There's just some amazing capabilities over there. What we're trying to do and what we're excited about is kind of the process that we use to get our data normalizes it to a degree so that it can be rolled up to different levels. But what we need more of is data, more scaled data, so that we can use more machine learning and things like that. I think we're still a little early there, but I would tell you we're definitely thinking about it. And if you think about where it could be powerful, there's so many applications on the software side about estimation, predictability. So much of it, if we were using more deeper analytics, we provide analytics, for example, on dependencies. And we can go in and say, hey, dependencies tend to cluster in these three programs, especially on these two teams. Dependencies tend to cluster around these types of components. And so the reason we do that analysis is we're trying to help companies figure out how to remove those so that they can open up throughput and be more agile. But if you think about how you could take that several steps further, if you had, be able to look across, all 20 variables, not just dependencies, but many other variables, look at the tendencies and the habits of the people and how they plan, how they estimate teams, how they plan, how they estimate. There's just a lot of really interesting simulation type work that could be done to help you get a better result, better quality, better predictability. So we're really watching that close. And it's something we would absolutely love to get into. And then the other part of that is value. The one of the hardest things for on the software side that Agile really helped with was, hey, we're going to build this. sometimes there's a direct monetary rainbow at the end of it, right? Sometimes it's for operational efficiency. It just, you know, sometimes you're building something and it's going to help us automate flow, and that's going to improve quality. And so the real question is, how do you measure, you know, building this versus that from a value perspective? Because that's a complicated endeavor. Some of it's quantitative, some of it's qualitative. There's a lot of opinions, right? So I believe that there could be some real interesting applications of AI around a lot of factors, bringing in, you know, not only just how hard is it to build and how valuable do we think it will be, but also being able to do simulation on big data and figure out value before we even build it. And I think that's a very powerful notion as well, because, you know, it's great to be really good at building stuff, but if you don't build the right stuff, you're still not going to win.
Gee, I was expecting you were going to say something a lot more exciting, like we're all going to be wearing goggles and you can look at the code and these bugs would jump out and you could just bash them with a hammer or something.
Wouldn't that be amazing?
That would be pretty cool.
My mind, you know, there's a part of me that thinks, you know, you look at what's happening with technology and how many jobs it's replacing, and, you know, I've heard people say, oh, someday the computers will write the code and, you know, robots will write the code and you program themselves and all that. And there's some really interesting places you could go with that, but I would say one of the safest professions to be in right now would be software.
Yeah, I've been hearing that for 20 years, all the way back to 4GLs that were supposed to write the code for you, and none of those have really turned out to be truly successful. So I just want to come back just before we wrap up back to Agile Craft itself. So one of the things, if you really sort of, you know, don't really look at the website, you scroll through, you see it through images, and you go, okay, here's another tool, right? This is another Rally, this is another version one. But that's not really what Agile Craft's all about. So tell us sort of where this fits into the ecosystem and why our listeners may want to go and explore this a little further.
Yeah, there's a few things that we've done that I would say make us different from what's out there. We kind of came at this market looking at the ALM space, which is, you know, the Agile Lifecycle Management space, where version one and Rally and those products live. Huge part of the puzzle, right? And massive respect for the innovators in how to do team level Agile with tooling. That's one side of the equation. The other one I mentioned earlier about, you know, there's this strategic planning piece and portfolio balancing piece that we still have to be able to address with Agile. And that has changed a lot. So a lot of the tools people used to use are broke, and now they're in Excel. And that's kind of the old PPM space. And then there's also the product management piece, which I still think is very important. You know, it's kind of the CEOs of the product and where they're going to go. And a lot of times they work in, you know, PowerPoint and building a lot of roadmaps and doing a lot of, you know, here's where we could go. And so what we've been trying to do that I think is unique is bring those three together. So if I'm building a roadmap, you know, let me see up into the strategic layer where that hinges in and how it's funded. Let me see down into the ALM side of, is it even possible? How much of it have we built? So now you're talking about real smart connected roadmaps at their level. Or if I'm down at the team level, plug me up into the rest of the world and let me know why this thing I'm working on is important. I'm an information worker. It's going to be hard to motivate me as an engineer and a specialist to do great work if I don't know why it matters. Why, you know, what's our purpose? Where are we going? Why is this piece I'm working on important? We can, if the worlds are connected, you give them that. And obviously at the top, being able to make the best investments possible for the company so that it's a good, growing, stable enterprise. And so we're connecting those three bubbles in kind of a vignette and bringing them together. And the reason we can do it is, you know, we're federated. We've decided at the team level, you know, Jira is a fantastic product. You know, Rally is a good product. TFS is a good product. They're good products at the team level. And if you're happy with them, fantastic. You've invested in them. If your teams are predictable and good quality and happy with that tooling, let's just scale it up. And so we built a lot of our IP is in federating that layer because there is a lot of complexity in those products and in their data models. And then the second one is because we built it top down, we fundamentally built a different product. We were thinking, well, how do I look at this by product line? And how do I look across divisions? And how do I look across different cadences? You know, maybe my sprints and things aren't lined up, but I need to plan dependencies as a large organization. All those things built top down give us the ability to kind of scale up. And then the last one, we haven't talked about this one yet, but it was one of the harder things for us to do and to bite off, was something we call multimodal. But we went back and, you know, we talked earlier about the 5 to 10 year transformation. Maybe it's a 4 year, maybe it's a 3 year, but it's a long time. And one of the things we want to do is start getting those teams that haven't really fully bought off on Agile, or they're kind of doing parts of Agile but not really. We want to help them get there faster. And so we went back on our platform and made sure that we could handle all levels of Agile maturity. So if I've got a team that's really Agile, they're in a flow state using Lean, fantastic. But they may have to work with another team that's kind of doing bad Scrum, or they're still doing kind of more of a 6-month traditional process that's stage gated. And so we went back and made the product what we would call multimodal. It basically means we can accommodate multiple levels of maturity because we know they're on a long journey. And we can nudge. We actually believe we can nudge them to agility faster. We've had really good success with things like, hey, you're still using that old traditional process, but check out this Kanban where you can drag your projects across a Kanban. Check out this cycle time. Check out this. Check out that. And all of a sudden, they start getting interested in Agile principles even before they've been asked to transform. So those three things and being able to bring together those three areas, we're driving towards business agility, and we feel like we've got a really good platform that can help a company get there.
Yeah, I'm just scrolling through the feature set in the product, and there are lots of things that that people often refer to that they're either struggling with or there are gaps in. So things like your planning and your budgeting process, and rolling up retrospective actions so that you can make decisions at a high level. They're all really cool. But when I scroll to the bottom, that you've got a section on your website about the more cool stuff. And so there's things like gamification and visual story mapping in there. But the one being a coach that sparked my interest there is you're talking about automated coaching. Have you just automated my job and put all our listeners out of business?
No. So we've actually put more information in now on this. So for example, if you're trying to roll out a framework like Scaled Agile Framework or Less or whatever, what we do is we come in with checklists in the product. It's like, here's the steps to plan a sprint or to do a planning increment or to do a retro. We let the customers and the coaches tailor that to the organization because everybody does it a little different. And then you can put a video of the coach who was up training the class in the product so that if they forget, they can come back and be reminded. You can give them guidance. So it's basically just as you try to scale this out across a bunch of people, take the coaching and whatever guidance we can give them and kind of build it into the flow of the product. Once you've done it a few times, once you've planned it, a sprint a few times, you don't need that checklist. But it's kind of like training wheels. So once they've gone through training, once they've been coached up, trying to make sure that they don't revert back and that they have some good checklists and some good documentation. So automated coaching would be links to videos of coaches talking primarily, but we do get a lot of excitement from that. So we're not replacing coaches, but we're trying to make what the coaches do a little stickier after they leave.
All right, disaster averted, then we're all safe. All right, we'll see.
Got to have the coaches. I tell you what, our business is so – we are so dependent on the transformation, so – we can provide an amazing platform, but if the Agile transformation fails, we don't have a good reference. So we love the people out there doing the hard work of teaching these companies how to be Agile and how to scale it.
Absolutely. 100%. Well, see, there's so many more things we could talk about, but time's getting away from us. So if people want to know more about you, if people want to know more about Agile Craft, if they want to sort of dig into that, what's the best place for them to go and find out more?
Yeah, so agilecraft.com is a good one. I'm steve@agilecraft.com, so a very simple email. And you can find me on Twitter. I think we're The Agilecraft on Twitter as well. And Facebook, all that fun stuff. So feel free to link up with me on LinkedIn, and would love to help anybody out that I can.
All right. And I assume there's plenty of interesting things coming down the pipeline, so people should continue to check it out over time, right?
I tell you what, we have been working for the last year and a half on a refactoring of our whole experience, which we've never done. So we're in the midst of launching version 10 of AgileCraft, and we're in limited availability right now, but it's a very exciting time for us. So love to get feedback from anybody out there on what they think about it.
Excellent. Well, it's really been a pleasure talking to you, Steve. There's one little thing we do at the end of the podcast. We are the Agile Revolution, so we like to end it off by a nice big hearty Viva la Revolution. So could you give us your Texas interpretation of Viva la Revolution on the count of three? You ready with us?
I'm ready.
One, two, three. Viva la Revolution!
Viva la Revolution!
Excellent.
That went very good. We'll use it.
you want to try it again?
I do. Yeah. Can you crop that out? That was terrible.
Well, we don't edit anything, but you can try it again.
I've never listened, so I don't know. But I will be listening, Craig. I like your podcast. Let's do it again.
All right. On the count of three. One, two, three. Viva la revolution. Just the yeehaw worked.
Yeehaw worked. We butchered that, but I do appreciate it, Craig.
All right. Thanks for your time, Steve.
Yeah. Have a good one.